Welcome to Windows into Eternity with Almeen. This hour you will receive powerful revelations of a world where mystery and miracles are commonplace. Here's your host, Almeen.
Very, very welcome to you. And we have a great show planned for you. Rogier actually sent out Twitter, I think you did, right? We call them tweets. You sent out one of those and got some fabulous question in from some of our those that follow along with your Twitter. Is that right, Rogier?
Well, yeah, but they track yours primarily, so yeah.
Okay, well, good. We've got some variety of questions that have come in then. And Rogier, please just tell us what some of these folks want to know.
Well, would you like a summary or should I just
dive in and we'll start answering.
Okay, well, the first question comes from Hong An, and she asks if Freemasonry and Rosicrucianism are corrupted today. I guess
okay.
You could look at this at many levels, but just tell us what comes.
Let's just take a look at corrupted, what it exactly means. Because corrupted could mean that they have ill intent, which if they do, I'm not aware of it. I worked with the lower levels of Freemasonry during, you know, my years in London when I was very active in certain things as the Countess of Shannon. And during that time, all I found was that they do good works. These are all the lower echelons. I never had close enough dealings with those beyond 32 degrees to know what they do or do not do. So ill intent, I never found. So that's number one. In fact, I found a great deal of good intent amongst everyday folk in Britain, in the area of Surrey and Hampton. Surrey and Hampshire. And so, you know, I opened their old age homes. They have state-of-the-art old age homes, and they're wonderful when there's widows with children. They're phenomenal. With good intent. What lies above 32 degrees? Obviously, I met them, I've had dinners with them and various social functions, but I don't know well enough. However, so ill intent, I have not encountered any, but I didn't work above that level. But now let's define ill intent as another thing altogether. Corruption. If corruption means that the original purposes, contracts, and secrets that they maintained, if that has become obsolete, or it is based on principles that are obsolete, we, you know, even though the goal is the same, but the principles became obsolete, that is corruption, and yes, that is the case. It has been the case with virtually every single solitary mystical tradition on Earth today. Toltecs, if they were able in August of 2006 to recognize that 9/10 of their life teachings that it was based on became obsolete, then they're not corrupted. But just sort of from what, you know, is out there, I just had my German sister in Ireland discuss with me some work from one of the leading sort of Toltec mysticism teachers of today, but he is still teaching the old laws that don't apply. And so then it's corrupt as well. The laws of how the Toltec Nagual mysticism changed is in the Ring of Truth. But so virtually every single mystical tradition have been holding sacred principles or they've been safeguarding secrets that have become obsolete. And so if that's the case, yes, they're both obsolete, and therefore they are both corrupt. an example would be shamanism. On our www.ancientshamanism.com, that Hong An herself put up for us, you can see a very, just a smidgen, but it shows you clearly how these wonderful traditions, in some instances, with good intent, are still being carried out, but it has become obsolete. And so, and then shamanism itself gathered tenets of it that had ill intent to harm. So from that perspective also, it became corrupt. So sometimes these secrets are turned to ill use, but in most instances they just simply don't work because they're obsolete.
Okay, so yes, when we use the word corruption as being obsolete, we can say that systems like Freemasonry or Rosicrucianism are corrupted, but it's not really saying much, because pretty much all
exactly
classical traditions are obsolete.
Exactly, yes.
Okay, although, and I would want to add though that if you, sorry, did you want to say something else?
Well, the only difference here really is that some of these traditions, the goal is simply the evolution of consciousness, or in the case of shamanism, it is the guidance and protection, and protectiveness is obsolete, but the guidance and protection of a band or a tribe or a people or a nation. So it depends also, sometimes the purpose itself can become obsolete. Obviously something that guides the people isn't an obsolete purpose, but the purposes of the Rosicrucianism lineages and the Masonry lineages, the purposes themselves have become obsolete, plus the principles that their deep hidden teachings, such as the alchemical teachings, as well as the divine architect creative principles, which we have on our websites, to put it right, their principles are incorrect. So the purpose plus the secrets that they guard, and in their instances, they guarded codes as well. And all three of those things have become obsolete.
Okay, but they were obviously at one time very much actual and appropriate for the
yes.
times.
Exactly.
Okay, and although I don't think, of course, when we look at this question, there is other ways to sort of other levels to look at it, which I'll just mention, because what you said about the Freemasons you had worked with, I think that the idea has been for a while, at least, that the well-meaning intentions of the lower echelons were kind of used as a guise, or were abused really by the upper echelons. So in that way, we could to say that they were all very well-meaning is probably not really getting to it, because that was maybe simply a sort of a cover for the upper echelons.
It might be a cover. You might say perhaps that the capstone was corrupt. I've not seen that, but perhaps it was. But the whole rest of the pyramid is not corrupt. I mean, I have never seen people work harder to gather money for the aged and the poor and so on, and just provide a healthy social life, which takes the place of men hanging out in the tavern. You know, it seemed very healthy, everything that I saw about the lower echelons of Freemasonry.
Okay, very good. Should we go on to the next question?
Yes.
Okay, well, I'm just sort of going to sort of mix them up a little bit. So there's more from Hong An, but I'll ask those later. There is one message from Christy, and she was actually also, she'd sort of conversed with me about a number of things, about the Adam and Eve representing the kind of the inner masculine and feminine Garden of Eden as the androgynous, and this idea of the female Eve being the root of all evil and punished through childbirth and stuff like that. But really, essentially, her question boiled down to, first of all, why does it seem so hard to bring the feminine in balance with the male, and whether there is something still keeping the feminine chained?
This morning, there were three things that I personally had to work with, and it had to do with the feminine pieces being left, you know, behind, basically. So let me just voice those, because the feminine became, there's a whole long story about why the feminine is viewed as evil. In the dream, the archdeity was the infinite mother. We have already discussed this, as the reason being that it's the right brain that enters with its dream body into the dream state. And in the dream, the feminine is the dominant one. But the arch enemy, or the arch perpetrators in the dream, were in fact also feminine. And they were the watchers of the matrices. And we just spoke about Freemasonry and Rosicrucianism. And in alchemy, which was, domain of Freemasonry, 33 levels of Freemasonry depict the 33 levels that was available of alchemy. Well, alchemy used throughout the ages the watchers as the allies and the matrices that they guarded as the allies to do their alchemy. And those have become completely obsolete when it was uncovered that the arch villains in the cosmos were feminine. They were the mirror images of the Infinite Mother. So that, it has some foundation. Now, what is it that caused the dream? It's the masculine. But, you know, that also is a step forward when we realize there are no mistakes. This morning in my own life, the portions that I had to look at is that, see, when we look at old photos of ourselves, or we look at, we think of how others see us or saw us, or we think of anything, like let's say somebody is 70 years old on their birth certificate. So that was not here. That's in the dream. Here they're not 70 years old. Here there's no time, and all of life was recreated out of the dream, but days ago. So what we're looking at is somebody that's a few days old, and they don't have to see themselves as wrinkly or 70 or obese or any age whatsoever. That those are dream images. And the female tends to be very look-oriented, because that's what her worth has been valued at through very many ages of living. But that's the dream. And we cannot bring anything we saw of ourselves as an image in the dream into this awake state, or we will perpetuate the way of the dream here, which, you know, is not what we want to do. So that's number one issue, is that we're perpetuating the dream here. If we're a few days old, think if you just are a few days old, you know that the rest of it was just memory implanted, so that for the sake of continuity. Who says that you are anything? You can be whatever you wish. So that was a very major part of it. Then, the other part that I uncovered for myself is that in my heart, I really didn't believe that people could properly love anything that is as vast as I am. How could they have an inkling? And you cannot love what you cannot at least know partially. And I thought that what people could know was such a smattering, because each of us is an identity, if you will, that's the wrong word, but as large as the cosmos, having a human experience. Even larger. That's pretty large. How can anyone know anyone else? And I really have understood by these principles of working with self-love. The mother gave me 2 days I had to work on them. And that you cannot have self-love without self-knowledge. You cannot love another without at least seeing a smidgen of them. And this morning I had to do the work to understand that even if someone saw a smidgen, the smidgen is made of the infinite being and is therefore perfection. And in the smallest field flower, the largest cosmos is revealed. Therefore, if you even see a small piece of me, and it is lovable in its perfection, then you can deduce that the rest is lovable. So I had to get to this point where, you know, that the lovableness was an issue. It's not that I didn't think I was lovable, it's that I didn't think anyone could possibly remotely comprehend me. And if they couldn't, how could they love? And then the third thing that I had to get, previously, we have spoken about the analogy of being the pot made from the clay made by the potter. And when we came out of the dream, we became we became part of the potter. I have been not very hopeful that people can love at all. Because of the dialogue in their heads, the heart cannot open where there's dialogue. And secondly, even when the dialogue stilled, there seemed to be a distortion, which was the frequencies that were obsolete, you know, of this clay, which is like a foreign substance in the infinite being. But we are no longer there. We are made from the infinite's matter. And the last show was a very significant show where we discussed this issue, and it was last two shows, where we discussed this issue that matter is all there is. But light, frequency, all of those things are part of what matter really is when it's all combined together, when the threads of the tapestry make a whole. And that as such, they have all love within them because all beings are now made from the infinite's body, from the infinite's incorruptible, holy, eternal matter. So they have all capabilities of loving. And I had to get that. So, A, you know, the weighing ourselves by how we were in the dream, gone. Secondly, feeling that people can't understand us and therefore not love us, that had to go by the wayside. And the third thing was this issue that people can now love. So those things were important. And I think women have, it's not just women, but men as well. But that is certainly part of it.
Okay, yeah, I'm just...
I think we are 5 minutes overdue for our break. Let's take a quick break.
Okay.
The world of mysticism has yet another reason to rejoice. Almeen has authored another manuscript of profound knowledge. It's entitled Opening the Doors of Heaven, Revelations of the Mysteries of Isis. Through a time travel tunnel linking Ireland and Egypt, Isis has sent a small group of masters to prepare for the day when the mysteries would once again be released to the world to restore balance and enhance life. They established the Order of the White Rose to guard the sacred objects and the secrets of Isis. In an unprecedented event heralding the advent of a time of light, these mysteries are released for the very first time. Packed with truly thought-provoking information, this book is bound to have an indelible impression on not only the reader, but on global New Age philosophy. To reserve your copy of this groundbreaking work, go to www.spiritualjourneys.com or call 502-499-0016. The Gift of the Unicorns is now available from Almeen. The magical book answers the question, do mystical creatures like the winged horse Pegasus, mermaids, and giants truly exist? What is their roles, and how can they be called upon for assistance? In their own words, the unicorns reveal where they went during the ages of darkness, their heroism in preserving purity and innocence, their golden shoes, and the secret mission they undertook for the mother of all creation. receive your copy of this amazing book of sacred secrets, The Gift of the Unicorns, go to www.spiritualjourneys.com or call 502-499-0016 today.
We welcome you back for our second quarter of our show. Angelo here. Did that answer everything fully?
We had a very
good first
so.
Quarter, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, there is some sort of a follow-up question, but I was just wondering, did you just say that the masculine started the dream, or did I not hear that correctly?
It was the electrical component of Infinite that became, remember we discussed this last show and the show before, it actually contracted into ego identification. And it's the contraction of mental that actually created a dream space.
Okay, yeah, I remember now. All right, well, the next question is from Chrissy as well. It's kind of a follow-up question. Men are having a very hard time accepting their feminine and women a hard time accepting their feminine wild woman. Why? I think this is both really about both male and female having trouble accepting the feminine wild woman. I'm not sure if she's seeing those to be as the same or not, but what can you tell us?
Let me just take a look. Because, see, again, are we speaking about the last week or two? Because as masters, we have been, the Master Christie certainly is a phenomenal master, but she's also a Nagual. But the point of the matter is that we have to be absolutely fluid. We currently have Toltec schools all over Europe that are teaching obsolete principles to well-meaning people, and it's so sad. Because they didn't bother to see all the signs that they teach people how to read their environment, that things completely changed in August. We have to fluidly flow. If they had a hard time with their feminine before, if the feminine and masculine were finally balanced, and incidentally, this morning was the morning when masculine and feminine were synchronized in all ways and done away with. This happened moments before the show's recording. And I can give a little input on that, but what I'm trying to say is don't expect life to be the way it was a month ago, even the way it was a day ago, or the way it was a week ago. So what happened this morning is that it was uncovered after Ruhir thought the show started at 11. I knew it started at 11:30. I went to my little girl's powwow at her school where I had to sing and drum for this wonderful little group of young people that were pretending to be the different tribes and that they, you know, to honor the native traditions. And what happened there is that their clocks was an hour faster. So, you know, I had to excuse myself before the end. I dashed home. I thought I was a half an hour late for the show, and it was still half an hour before I had to do the show. So I recognized, you know, and I asked Mother about this, if there was a problem with the synchronization between men and women, because the male caretaker at the school did not fix the clocks. And Mother said, yes, that there was. The masculine and feminine were synchronized to make the same time. Yesterday, we put on the blog a sketch of the master, Shelley. She's an oracle from Toronto, that she put on a beautiful, beautiful circle. But Rohir felt something was out of sync. And it was, because we were in different times, really. For the time that it became in sync, he was at the time before it was in sync. And it's a beautiful drawing, perfectly appropriate, but he was looking at it as a day before it was due. So this synchronization of psychologically experiencing a synchronized moment, that's a roundabout way of saying of experiencing the same psychological time. But we don't have the T word around anymore, so we call it the same moment. So that was done this morning. Everything was synchronized between masculine and feminine. Yesterday, communication was synchronized. And this morning, this happened 1.5 hours before the show began.
Okay, yeah, I'm sort of, I've lost you a few times in that I don't hear anything, so I'm not sure what that is.
Oh.
I'm not sure if you're there now. Okay, now you're here. Yeah, I just had the line go blank a few times.
Oh, no. We hope it didn't go blank for our listeners.
No, it seems to be okay. All right, well, and what do you make of this, this ID conveyed by Christy well, actually, let me sort of backtrack a little. We've got this video that I'm sort of preparing. It should be up in about a week for YouTube about Anunnaki, Tree of Life, and Tree of the Knowledge of Good and Evil. And so answers will be found in there. But putting that aside, what do you make of this idea of Adam and Eve as created creatures somehow relating to the inner feminine and masculine?
I believe that there's a secret that I haven't yet uncovered, first of all, but that theme goes multiple levels deep. And so it starts basically enacted by the Anunnaki here on Earth, with the Adam and Eve being two hybrids that were finally made from an indigenous race that they found when they came here. There was sort of a primitive race living on the surface of the planet. The more evolved races had moved into the inner planet. And so that is going to be on that YouTube that we're making. But it did begin there, that the masculine gave his seed so that the feminine Eve would be created. So there's that. And then if you recall, I believe that we got the records. It's like a blur, you know, when we make things even a few days ago. But I believe that I translated some of the Isis records at the time, and that it spoke about the Tree of Life and the Tree of Good and Knowledge of Good and Evil. So we won't go there, because we translated that. That should be on the YouTube in a week or so, you say, right? But now, let's go up higher. At the very low levels of the fall, you will find that some of the mirrored goddesses, not the real thing, not the real infinite being, but those aspects of her in the mirror, those mirrored goddesses actually gave pieces of themselves away to the masculine in order for the masculine to, to be more, because they created masculine creations, in which was not supposed to be, but that's part of where the artificial life forms came from that we've spoken of before, and they gave pieces of themselves to try and get those life forms to be more, more like mother's creations, the real thing. In other words, for those of you that have not tuned into previous shows, there was a large number of artificial life forms formed in the cosmos as an act of rebellion against the Holy Infinite Mother. And why she is the real thing is that she has had no beginning, nor will she have an end. These mirror aspects, which is there as long as the mirrors of that ego identification created a mirrored chrysalis around her. So what we have is that they created beings and gave off pieces of themselves to those beings in order to make them more lifelike. So the feminine created the male there, gave him a piece of her, and we encountered this at many levels as we progressed with the ascension of the planet. I came across this, that some of the goddesses had given pieces of themselves away, if you call those mirror aspects goddesses. So you encounter it there. Then at the highest level, there is something that I don't understand yet. And I can, we're have to actually take another break. When we come back from the break, I can ask Mother what it is.
All right.
In this, the fourth book, The Ring of Truth, which chronicles Almaine's journey, she tells of the promise and the potential inherent in the resurgence of the feminine principle, increasingly felt in all aspects of current human experience. The operation of new laws governing the cosmos are explained together with the reasons for their creation. We are introduced to Mother, the primal creative energy that pervades every aspect of existence. We learn of her love and her laws and how to incorporate them into every thought and act. We are given samples of her divine language, its meaning, and its power. Mother's great gift to humanity, the healing power of Velvaspada, is revealed. This new approach to dissolving disease of mind, spirit, and body replaces previously existing methodologies. Application of its techniques removes old barriers of physically oriented existence and opens a broad pathway to a life of joy and fulfillment. Discover Mother and the Ring of Truth, as well as all of Almaine's books, CDs, lectures, workshops, or magazine by logging on to www.spiritualjourneys.com. A Life of Miracles is a deeply inspiring and motivational book in its content. It is unique in its field in making man's relationship as the microcosm to the macrocosm understandable to both beginning and advanced readers. It's a detailed guide to living a joyous and balanced life that provides a carefully laid out map to achieving the magnificent destiny that beckons at the apex of human experience, that of ascension. If you're ready to ascend to a higher consciousness, begin each day with A Life of Miracles or any other books, CDs, lectures, workshops, or her magazine by contacting Almaine at www.spiritualjourneys.com.
Well, my brothers and sisters, we said that when we got back that we would ask Mother what it is that we're missing regarding this issue of the masculine giving form, if you will, by giving his rib, this story, which is not a literal story at all, to the feminine. So let's go and take a look at it. Taishkoi kiesh nasa. Ishba ukievi. Ahuyah nasa. Keshkatu usene echebakia vutia ikichai nasa. Veshbavi e. So Mother is saying, in a way, her form did come from the masculine. That the feminine form came because of the masculine. And now she is explaining further. Well, she says this is something I never knew before. She said that she had no form before the contraction of the masculine formed a dense ball, trapping portions of the feminine within. It gave the feminine the feeling of being captured. But at the same time, the density of the vast masculine components contracting into a ball created something like a ball of mirrors that could not allow light through. The light bounced off and formed a mirrored image. We spoke about this incidentally in last week's and the weeks before the programs. The feminine itself, not understanding the mirrors to be what they were, contracted into the center of the ball. In other words, she made herself small because she could not understand the linear space that developed from the mirror images that seemed to recede into eternity. eternity around her all of a sudden. Can you imagine, my brothers and sisters, how bewildering it must have been, never having had any concept of lines of space, or never having had any form, to suddenly find yourself in a ball of mirrors, and whichever way you were to look, if you made a little ball of light, it would go on forever and ever. Whatever you did, it went into linear lines. And initially, if Mother was spaceless, she still would somehow feel that there's a confinement around her, even if she's formless. Mishpachina sahuchi aya evichi kuhuye mishpachishkainech subachkiviatu une pakya inisyakuna vasha sichakaiche a uhyehene eveche kavakunishva spikchikia kunu uchihaya bava yevichukuyenech abikiaka ichiakta inasusu chinia. Mother contracted her consciousness that was spread over the ball, but could not exit the ball because of the dense nature of the masculine that surrounded her like a sphere of mirrors. She contracted to the center so that she could figure out that which lay around her, for it was new to her conception. Nothing new had ever happened within her. This also was a contradiction. So there was, she shattered. A shattering happened yet again within the sphere. And a flower of life sphere was born. The shattering happened because of the second contradiction. We spoke last week and the week before of the first contradiction that caused the masculine to contract. The second contradiction was that there could be anything new in a being that knows all things. But what was new is limits, boundaries. So the mother contracted to the center of the sphere. And as she made a little ball herself, she noticed the lines of light as space forming in all directions. Because until you have a form, you won't notice that in a mirror. As she changed her shape, the shape changed all around her. And so she became aware that she could create for herself form. Three-dimensionality happened. Directional space happened. And so for the first time, she could relate to something. Mishkuyer teska hunicha iyevacha pikiuku inisyach kiapa ushurta navas sahma kiyechai kune eveche pichukuhih navacha. So in all ways, it is the contraction of the masculine into a form himself. Remember, he's the ball of mirrors, containing the feminine within, that gave rise to her making a form also. So the Adam and Eve story, Adam created form first. He was the first form in that story. Then the mother took on form, and she got this from the father because of the fact that she looked in the mirrors he provided to see the form. Trillions of forms were attempted. Till the infinite found the best form that delighted her. Kaskachia ma'usech, niskiha veshkavu tiakunech. By creating trillions and trillions of little factions within her. In other words, by the flower of life sphere becoming more and more and more broken up into little bits, she was able to project those little bits into the mirror. and individuated life formed as a reflection of the infinite being. Payechsaba eche, uchveskede echiyama, tiaskushkayava, kiyachna skeve, and innocence was lost. The state of purity and well-being that comes with innocence was lost because linear time arose as a result of the formation of space. And when linear time arose, a discordant tone arose, disruptive of well-being. Peshkuchichna Savachkava, she was banished from the Garden of Eden. The masculine also suffered by the discordance within the hollowness of his being. Peshkia unu ichea. Bach paskava ishasach nasuya vacha. Humankind were the first to be created. They were created that the Infinite Mother could study life within them. They represented the first 144 spheres, offspring, that were created. Kiyashuchna savai, pechyechna skuha. After exiting the dream, there was no hierarchy. Piyakuchyechna sayeva, but linear creation took place. Therefore, some beings were created before others. Inside the dream. Nishpakuhyech kyakatai inishvasu. The function of the feminine was to find a way out of the entrapment. And the masculine had as challenge to let go of its tightly defined boundaries to become fluid and flexible. Niskaiche Bausia, Nishkaichech. The story was told to my children who told it to their children. And in this way, the story was preserved that I might remember about the state of innocence and what it was that had occurred. For there was the possibility that ball would become all I knew and could entrap me forever. Bishkakyuku neskecheve. That perspective was held inside the ball, which is the dream state. Mahkuskechea kanavash peskiava uche, but is in effect part of the illusion. Kyanasai chichnaba kuchiha. Thus the benefit of this dream state that we have been in is this day revealed to you for the first time, for it was never before said that the infinite did not have form. Now you know that, and you understand that form and creation, which is form within the formless, has resulted as a benefit of encountering the dream. And the dream, what is it really? It is nothing more than identity consciousness, thinking that the body and your emotions and your mind are all that there is. Let's take a commercial break and then we'll be back.
Almin continues the exploration begun in her previous books, A Life of Miracles and Journey to the Heart of God, probing further into the nature and meaning of existence. Secrets of the Hidden Realms introduces the readers to the goddess mysteries as they apply not only to individual human lives, but to the cycles of the cosmos. From this background in the intangible functions of being, Almin is led into the dimensions of non-humans, interacting with creatures previously known only in myth and folklore. the inner relationships of fairies, dragons, gnomes, unicorns, and other elementals, and their influence on humankind is explained. Vivid accounts of encounters with these beings and others existing as expressions of the widely divergent vibrations illustrate the essential unity of all creation. Journeying from these subtle realms, the reader is shown the ultimate expression of humanity, evolution into God being. Secret of the Hidden Realms can be obtained from Almeen, along with her other books, CDs, workshops, lectures, and magazine by logging on to www.spiritualjourneys.com. After 3 months of intense physical preparation in January 2004, Almeen experienced a transfiguration, entering the presence of the infinite for the second time since moving into God consciousness, the state of no longer identifying with the ego, in 2000. In the weeks that followed, the powerful revelations contained in this book emerged from that all-encompassing silence. Having lost most of her linear thinking during this transition, much of this book has been written without conscious thought. This form of automatic writing, like automatic speaking she now does, flows freely from source into her own handwriting from which it was transcribed. Few have entered into God consciousness to leave the bliss to teach. Still fewer enter the stage of immortal master, and in addition, continue to function among the masses. But as a Toltec Nahual and seer, Almeen's life is dedicated to leading others to complete freedom from mortal boundaries. Journey to the heart of God is an opportunity of a lifetime to see through the eyes of one who has encountered the indescribable realms of eternity. From such a perspective come insights that can heal the deepest wounds of alienation found in human hearts. Journey to the heart of God contains, no matter how profound, truth. Truth that can be recognized for what it is, and is the truth that shall set us free. Pick up a copy of The Journey to the Heart of God and discover your personal truth and freedom through Almeen's books, CDs, workshops, lectures, and magazine by logging on to www.spiritualjourneys.com.
Welcome back. We're in our final quarter, and we hope you're going to stay with us for next week's program as well, because some of these topics we won't be able to finish this week, and so they'll have to carry over to next week. Ruhir, what other questions did you want us to look at?
Well, first of all, I'm just wondering a number of things about the message that just came through, because as far as I understood, you said at the end that never before had it been said that the infinite did not have form, but I didn't quite get that because I think generally...
Before the dream. I personally, here's what I assumed, because to have a dream body, normally the dream body is the exact same shape of an existing body that lies somewhere sleeping. So I assumed there was a body that went into a coma of some sort, that its dream body exited into the dream space, and that is where creation was formed. So that's what I assumed, that there was a body of the mother outside before the dream formed. Mother says that there's never been a body outside.
Okay, but I mean, generally it's a very sort of Eastern philosophy thing to say that the infinite is formless, so it's not really so automatically the case that form would be associated with the infinite.
Well, you can say the infinite has form and you'd be accurate, and you can say the infinite is formless and you would also be accurate. The infinite has created a form to relate to its beings.
Okay, and so what would be the relation between form and illusion then? Because if we say that from the form and then the directional and the three-dimensional, but if we also say that the seven directions, or I'm not sure now if it's maybe the six of the seven directions,
a look at form as being a reflection, it is an illusion. Even if it's an expression of the infinite, if it is an externalization, it's an illusion. So anything that's in the mirrors is illusional as a reality, But when we exited the dream and we came out of the mirrors into the dream space, like a daydream within the mirror, but still we were just in a dream. And so it was only when we exited the dream, when that sphere of mirrors dissolved, that we finally got to the point where we can call ourselves real, even though we have form. And that one's going to be very hard if you ask me to explain it. I've never tried to do it. I have an understanding of it, but you're speaking of spaceless space, so it's very difficult for me to explain it. If you want to, I'll try it, or you can go on to another question.
I think we should probably go on. I just wondered though if you'll remember any of this after the show, because I think we should probably capture some of it in the for like a separate movie.
If you write down, if you write it down as questions, then I will.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Okay,
and
we've
then
got
just
about 5 minutes left.
Okay. Well, then just one technical issue, because I may have misheard you now, but did you? I thought on the record, the video recording that we made, that you said that, let me get this right, that Adam was created from Eve, but it seems now that you said it the other way around.
The truth of the matter is that the one preceded the other, but they were not created from each other. They were created similarly. The one preceded the other. Eve did, in fact, precede Adam, but by very, very close. It was as though they were created very soon after each other. They got, however, their seed from one of the Anunnaki, which is Enlil. Sorry, Enki. They got it from Enki. His name was E-N-K-I. He became known later on as Ptah in the Egyptian pantheon of gods, but he was the one that provided the semen to make those two, and both of them had, they had different mothers, but they were very closely made, you know, first the male, let me double check this, please. I was under the understanding the female was made first, but it's a long time ago to remember. Just 1 second here. The female was birthed first.
Okay, but I was going to say.
But one was not really made from each other. They weren't really made from one another.
Okay, and maybe I misheard you then, because I thought earlier it seemed that the male had precedence. But would you say then that this story of what happened there in Eden and how they were created, but that somehow mirrored this sort of story of creation on a larger scale, in terms of what you said about the contraction and the form and the male and the female and the mirrors?
Yes.
Okay, well, that's pretty interesting.
Okay, we've got a quick question moment left.
Let's see. Okay, well, then Hong An is asking about the astrology, whether our belief in the current astrology is somehow keeping the old in place.
Okay. Let's just ask Mother of that really quickly. Okay, Mother is saying that the old is simply no longer working. She said that it was designed so that it would work even though it had no foundation until the day that the Isis astrology in its fullness came forth. And what we have currently on the astrologyofisis.com, which I think is under construction, and it should be up within days here, but what we currently have is a replacement. So no, there is no validity in the old astrology because of the fact that it's been removed. The old astrology was like she was breathing life into it, even though the planetary configurations weren't where we think that they are, because of the illusion of our space right now. If, for those that are not familiar with my work, it has been kept in place to prevent panic on Earth. But we fulfilled the scripture in the book of Revelation in the New Testament that there will be a new heaven and a new earth. And there was. A new earth has been created, multiple times, in fact, and the new heavens. But in order not to frighten us, humanity still sees it the way it is. And I've mentioned on previous shows that some of the oracles, like I know the oracle Jelena recently in Hawaii was able to see through the veil and see that, for instance, huge parts of Orion were missing and so forth. So there's different configurations of stars than what we think that there is. And so Mother says no at this point because we now have the new, it no longer works.
All right.
Okay, and we have perhaps one quick question left.
Yeah, I'm not entirely sure how this works because it keeps seems like we have the last question, but then it isn't. So,
well, let me just talk to my brothers and sisters, and we'll close the show. Then it's very hard to put you on the spot like that. That's true. My brothers and sisters, I just want to tell you that with the astrologyofisis.com, www.astrologyofisis.com, that the Master Hong An will have up and running for you very, very soon with her usual beautiful efficiency. I want you to know that for the first time, we have been given from the libraries of Isis an astrology that was designed for our day because it was designed for the configuration of stars that would currently be around our planet. We've given you only the first layer of it. There are, let me see, there are 72 layers to this astrology. But it is for the first time that you use planetary influences to determine your life instead of them determining it for you. It is the empowering astrology of the metamorphosis of man into godhood. Thank you for joining us, and we'll talk with you again next week.
We hope you've enjoyed today's show, Windows into Eternity with Al Mee. Please join us again next week.